Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through J.W. Cole Financial, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. A little bit under the weather, but I'm feeling good enough to bring a top show to you tonight. And, of course, on Saturday morning for the replay. Rod Holloway will be joining me in just a few minutes to talk about the markets, the economy, and, of course, later on the program, I'm going to talk a lot about what I learned while I was in Denver. You know, I was at the EdSlot Elite IRA Advisor meeting, brought back a lot of really great stuff. And then, you know, later on, there's a piece on blood and money. And we had a speaker at the event I was attending and talking about inheritance. And, you know, you've heard me say, and I wrote about this in my book as well, fair is not always equal. And he has some really good insights on how to properly give inheritance and how to give while you're living and how to give whenever you pass away. So we'll be sharing a lot of these great ideas. We have questions of the week, all kinds of great stuff. But before we get to any of that, let's do a little news of the week. Brought to you by Bloomington Affordable Self-Storage. Reclaim the clutter areas of your home with help from Bloomington Affordable Self-Storage. It's over on 17th Street. It's newly remodeled with 24-hour on-site management offering pickup and truck rental. Call about their fall special. That's at 812-339-4221. If you haven't checked them out, it's really nice over there on 17th Street. Let's talk about what 80-year-olds say about retirement and what you can learn about retirement. You know, it's a mistake as experience always beats estimates. You know, we talk about estimating this and estimating that, but experience. Albert Einstein said it best, the only true source of knowledge is through experience. So as the New York Life talked to 500 existing retirees in their 80s, they asked one question, you know, what makes for a successful and happy retirement? Well, number one, they said, was income. Income is king. You know, most of them said, really, financial security is by far the most important thing, even over their health, they said, and their age. They feel, I mean, the financial security, but they said income is king. And early years in retirement is best. And, you know, we've talked about this before, that in your retirement years, you kind of have your go-go years, your slow-go years, and then your no-go years. So they say, hey, early on in retirement, we felt better. We enjoyed it more. And then they said, number three, we were living longer than we expected. Over half, 54%, said when they started planning for retirement, they weren't expecting to live as long as they have. So make sure that you steer your savings towards autopilot. Nearly 88% or nearly 90% said they wish that they had more pension-like income in retirement. The majority, 52%, said that they wish their income was more on autopilot, giving them greater peace of mind than accounts that have to be actively managed. You've heard me say it before, secrets to a happy retirement, what is it? Faith, family, friends, and yes, that fixed income stream. Well, Medicare premiums are not going to be as bad as predicted. 2 weeks ago, I talked about how if nothing changes, that a little known rule in the system called the Hold Harmless Rule was going to cause Medicare premiums to go up for 17 million Americans that are on Medicare, 52%. Well, the Obama administration and congressional leaders have finally reached a tentative budget agreement that will actually prevent a 52% spike in Medicare premiums for millions of Americans, and that is coming soon. What else happened? Well, the budget deal could also nix a popular, and we'll talk about this later in the program, Social Security claiming strategy. Oh no, what are we going to do? This is something we've hung our hat on, right? File and suspend. File and restrict to spousal benefits only. That's all possibly going away with this new congressional budget that's passed the Congress already. It's headed to the Senate. The president's going to sign it. So it's still a little bit fluid. We don't know all the details on this, who it's going to affect, when it's going to go into effect, but we'll definitely be the first to bring it to you when that happens. So, hey, a lot to talk about on tonight's show. We'll be right back. Rod Holloway will be joining us live in just a few minutes. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. You know, October rocked. You know, with just a few trading days remaining in the month of October, the S&P is up over 8% so far this month. That actually ranks this as the third best October in the last 26 years. Joining me now on the phone is Rod Holloway, the portfolio manager over at our office, CFCI. And Rod, every quarter we become focused on earnings reports as companies begin to dole out information on how they performed in the last quarter. And I think so far we've heard from about half the companies and actually reported about 2% higher profits than this time last year. S&P seems to have gotten a little bit of a boost from the tech sector and then some individual success stories. But this is just the same old record every quarter, isn't it, Rod, that we focus on these earning reports? And actually, I'm grateful that we finally are focusing on earnings.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what drives long-term stock prices is the fundamentals of the companies themselves. So, you know, anytime you get caught up in a market in which stocks are going up because of Fed action or government and monetary or fiscal stimulus that either side, whether it's the Fed or policies enacted by Congress, those are extremely short-lived. Those are not lasting gains that you get in the stock market. What the lasting gains are is, did the company sell more goods or services, whatever they're offering? Were they able to maintain their existing margins? Did they come up with a new innovative product that really ramped up sales or maybe dramatically changed something in the workplace for other industries and companies? And that's what drives it long term. So, yeah, anytime we can get away from being so focused on the Fed or outside actions, that it's not that they have no impact on the market and the companies. They do have some impact, but the impact should be felt and acknowledged through the earnings reports on a quarterly basis. Was it a positive impact on this specific company? Did it help their earnings? Were they able to borrow capital at a cheaper rate and invest that capital into new structures, whether that be, you know, a new warehouse, a new facility, a new piece of equipment that makes the overall company more efficient? That's what should be driving stock prices.
You know, and they did this higher profits, Rod, on actually lower dollars coming in the door, on lower revenues. And I know that's been some of a concern to you, but I think these lower revenues that are coming in, and they're making more profit. That means they're being a little more efficient. Probably the cost of goods and services maybe have gone down a little bit in some areas. Like, for instance, if you're a trucking company, obviously the cost of fuel is less. If you're a roofing company, the cost of shingles might be less because petroleum prices are down. But I know that's something that you always keep an eye on.
Yeah, most definitely. It's one of those things. Obviously, having more earnings this quarter than you had a year ago, same quarter, is never a bad thing, even if the revenue isn't higher. But there is always cause for concern, because if the revenue doesn't increase and the earnings increase, then just like you said, there are some efficiencies that have been put into this quarter that have allowed your earnings to go up, even though your revenues didn't. And the reason that's cause for concern long-term is because you can't typically cut your way to earnings profitability quarter after quarter after quarter. There eventually comes a point in time that you have cranked out all of the efficiencies you can get out of your current workforce, and then that process stops. So it's not a disaster when revenues are lower than estimates and earnings are higher than estimates, but you do have to pay attention and acknowledge what caused that disconnect between earnings and revenue growth, and is it something that is sustainable, or is it something that you have to be aware of and see it go away in the future? And what we're seeing with this earnings cycle so far is some of the companies are beating on the top and bottom line both, and other companies that it was expected that they were going to struggle, because we knew that they were smack dab in the middle of some areas that things have dramatically slowed down for them. And so that was to be expected. You knew you were going to have a bit of an earnings shortfall. And then that's when the gain comes in of the companies making comments to lower expectations that the analysts put out there, so that they can come in and jump over that lowered hurdle.
You know, folks, why do earnings matter? Well, since stocks are simply ownership of shares in a company, I mean, you're an owner in that company, and then all things being equal, good news for that underlying firm would mean, generally, that you would see an upward movement of the stock, and bad news would be greeted with a drop. Now, these relationships get a little tricky when investors like Rod or myself or anyone that's managing your money anticipate good or bad news and buy or sell a stock to speculate before the earnings report comes out, and they're wrong. That's one reason markets are often more volatile during the earnings season. It's been that way for a long, long time. But, Rod, you know, earnings reports are a great way to get a look inside of the business climate for U.S. firms. Earnings reports contain a lot of information. I know that you look at, like, revenues, profits, challenges, expectations about the future, like you just said. The data is a gold mine for folks as they create forecasts about the future. And of course, Rod, it's our job and those that we rely on to dig through that stuff and search for some of these individual success stories. And of course, we're always on the lookout for opportunities and strategies that work. So I know you do a really good job with that. You lean on some pretty darn smart people. It's not just you, but some people that really know what the heck they're doing as well in this particular areas. Walk people through kind of your process of how you select things and who you lean on and why that's so important.
Sure. As you said, it's not me doing the work myself. So I do lean on some outstanding analysts. Raymond James, which is one of our custodians. We have multiple, but Raymond James is one of our primary custodians, especially on the active management side of the world. They have a great analyst team, a team that wins awards consistently year after year for being some of the top in their sector analysis. So we lean heavily on Raymond James and what they provide. Raymond James as a firm, and this went back to some regulation changes a while back, you know, they can't just disseminate only their information to us. So we get information from Barclays and from Credit Suisse in there. I pay attention to those. I don't lean on them quite as heavily as Raymond James. And then other great people such as Scott Minard and Guggenheim and David Kelly of J.P. Morgan Chase, mm-hmm. Brian Kelly of the First Trust Group. Those are all people that we value their opinions. They have consistently been right more than they've been wrong. It's not that they're never wrong, but they're consistently right. And I like the fact they put their money where their mouth is. We caution our clients all the time, be cautious of the articles you read and who it's coming from. Is it coming from somebody who is actively managing money on a daily basis? Then their opinion may hold more water than others that maybe are just journalists and do research, but they're not actually out there managing money on a daily basis. So all of those names I just rattled off, they are all making investment decisions, whether it is for the firm as a whole or for individual portfolios that they manage. They are actually putting dollars to work with the ideas and investment themes that they are disseminating to everybody out there.
Well, folks, early when I first started the segment, I talked about how October rocked, and it has rocked up over 8%. But remember how terrible September was. So, Rod, it just got us back above the waterline and that just a little bit. But if you look at Nifty November, according to By the Numbers, our friend Mick Higley, November's actually been the third best performing month for the S&P 500 since 1990. Over the last 25 years, it's actually had an average gain of 1.6% during November. Over that entire period of time, 18 out of 25 Novembers has been up. And Rod, typically the fourth quarter is pretty strong, and we talked about that even in September, that hey, don't panic, don't worry, I think that the fourth quarter could turn out okay. And we still obviously believe that to be true.
Yeah, most definitely. Now, what I would say, because October was so strong, I would be surprised for November to rank as one of the better months of the year. That doesn't mean I expect November to be a disaster or a big sell-off. But I think part of the reason November historically is pretty good is because August, September, and October are historically fairly bad. So you're getting that bounce-back effect. And then, of course, you start heading into December, the so-called Santa Claus rally, and many people allude that to just being the holiday season. Typically, people are in a little bit better moods and a little bit maybe more free with their dollars to start saying, hey, I've got some extra money I set aside for Christmas. I didn't spend it all. Maybe I'm going to go invest the rest of this. It's more of an emotional thing, I think, than there is anything to the fundamentals are better in the fourth quarter than they are in any other quarters. But I think that plays into why November is historically pretty good, which is why I would caution on not expecting the same thing that you historically see in November, because an 8% month is extremely strong, especially for it being in October.
Rod Holloway, everyone. He is the portfolio manager over at our office, CFCI. And Rod, of course, in December, and I'm not going to talk about in today's program, but if December could get a little volatile, November, December, as we talk about the Fed. So we're going to let Hot Rod go. Rod will be hearing you on Glass in the Morning at 7:20 sharp, and I'll see you bright and early in the morning.
Sounds good. Have a great rest of the show, Dave. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Thanks, guys. Hey, when we come back, you know, as I last week was in Denver at the Ed Slott Elite IRA Advisor Group, I mean, I'm around so many great financial professionals, and one of the things we're going to talk about when we come back, it's capital gain distribution season on mutual funds. It's possible, folks, that you could pay taxes on a fund that you lost money on or are flat on. We're going to try to get you in front of that. We're also going to talk about retirement plans for some small businesses, using up your tax bracket, not letting that go to waste, and using long-term care expenses to offset your IRA distributions. It all kinds of great stuff to follow that up with as well. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. I'm giving Jim, the producer, thumbs up, thumb down on the bump music. I'm like, I hate that one. I love that one. So I want it to be more peppy. So look for things like, you know, Jimmy Buffett, more Mellencamp, things like that. So Jim's going to do a good job of putting together a bunch of good bump music for next week's show. Last week in Denver, you know I'm addicted to Uber. I ran around a couple times in the city of Denver with an Uber. That was pretty cool, but that's not what I'm talking about. We're going to be talking about some of the things that we discussed and unveiled at the big Elite IRA Advisor meeting in Denver. Great meeting. What I love about it is I get to sit around the best of the best financial professionals in our industry. I mean, learn about their practices, their best practices, tax, investment, distribution strategies. I mean, really get you thinking and questioning the status quo. And I love it. I absolutely love it. But here's some of the basics. Here's some going back to some of the basics. Let me first take a second and explain how mutual funds work. Now, I'm going to be talking about mutual funds that you do not own inside of a retirement plan. So these are funds that you own on the outside. The fund manager takes all of our money and will buy a variety of different stocks or bonds. And as new money comes in and money goes out, I mean, there's redemptions, there's purchases, they change the portfolio around. But at the end of the year, they look at it and say, okay, do we have gains or do we have losses? Well, if they have gains, they will distribute those gains to you. And when that happens, that's a taxable event. If they have losses, they don't. Those losses get stored up. So let's go back to 2008, 2009. I know it's a distant memory and hopefully you forgot all about it by now, but there were a lot of losses and a lot of losses were built up. So even though in 9, 10, 11, and even into 12 and 13, as gains happened, they were able to offset those with losses and not distribute any capital gain distributions to you. This year, and I said last year could be big and it was, but this year it looks like it's going to be even bigger. Now, this isn't on the, you know, international funds necessarily or your small cap funds. These are on the big funds. Like I was looking at a mutual fund distribution schedule that's upcoming, and we're talking about blue chip growth fund or equity income fund. I mean, these are the names that are on the back of all of your investments, your mutual funds, U.S. equity fund. One very big, well-known fund family, a lot of you probably have it, is going to distribute massive capital gains. Now, they've declared this. They said, here's our expectations, and this is middle of October when they released it. And in some cases, it's 11 to 12% of the share value. So if you have a $100,000 investment, and it, first of all, let me go back up. It doesn't matter when you purchased it. You could have owned this fund for 10 years, or I could have just bought it. If I just bought it and I get a capital gain distribution, I'm going to pay taxes on a fund that I haven't even owned for very long. Because remember, it's a mutual fund. You're buying into it. It's kind of you're buying into the household. Think about this. $100,000 investment, and if they distribute out $10,000 of gains, I'm going to pay taxes on that. And I've not even owned it for very long in some cases. But even if you have owned it for a while, maybe you're just kind of getting back to where you were before. Maybe you bought it when it went down, and now it's back up above. You know, you've been, you know, you might be able to sell that and move to a different fund that has built-up losses or maybe not as big of a capital gain distribution. It's really time to call, find out, ask your advisor, what are the expectations for long-term capital gain distributions? That's just long-term. There's other short-term ones as well. Now, in this one fund family that I'm giving you the example, they've said, here's our estimates. The ex-dividend date, which means the record date, it's around middle December, and they're going to pay it out around the end of December. So as long as you're not in that fund during those times, then you'll be fine and not be hit with that. So just something to keep your eyes on and something to watch out for. You know, we talked a lot about retirement plans for small businesses. You know, so many people just say, okay, I'm going to do an IRA. Well, you're putting $5,000 in or $6,000 in, and maybe if you're married, that's two times. But I want to put more in. So you can do something like a simple plan. If you have employees and you have a simple plan or a SEP plan, you're going to have to also put money in for them. But for self-employed people, a SEP's a great idea. You can put like 15% of your income into a SEP. Simple plans, you know, you can put much more into a simple than an IRA. So we talked about that. So as we get towards the end of the year, if you're someone that needs to or wants to set up a retirement plan, this is the time to do it. All the CPAs, you know, they're not as busy as they were. They're just working on trying to get their CPE credits here at the end of the year. You know, October 15th is the deadline for the automatic extensions. Those are behind us. So this is the time to start talking to financial professionals about this kind of stuff. Something else, and again, this is all year-end tax planning stuff. You should have a pretty good idea of about where you are from an income standpoint. And remember, taxes in this country are on a marginal basis. So up to a certain amount, you pay 10%. Then up to the next amount, you pay 15%. And then the next dollar, you pay up to 20 or 28. I mean, it's the next dollar system. I see a lot of people that leave a lot of that tax bracket on the table. If you're married, filing a joint return, and your taxable income is under like $78,000, you're in the 15% tax bracket. Now, taxable income is your gross income, and then you take off your standard deduction, your personal exemptions. That nails it down to the taxable income. And if you're down in the, in that area, maybe you're at $50,000 or $55,000, you have $10,000 or $20,000 of 15% money to use. Well, use it. Do a Roth conversion. You know, do something to use up that $15,000. We talked a lot about Roth conversions, of course, in the last few days over in the Ed Slot meeting, and people still think that it's either an all or nothing proposition. You do not have to do all of your IRA. You can do some of your IRA. And then even better, let's say that you have an unintended consequence. Uh-oh, we're going to pay more than I thought. Uh-oh, my Medicare premium's gone up. Uh-oh, something else happened. I paid too much. That's what the recharacterization is for. You can put that money back just as though it never happened up until October of the year following the conversion. So we did so much of that discussion and talk and planning. You know, here's something else. You're a business, and you've had some net operating losses. Don't let those go to waste. Do not let them go to waste. Do a Roth conversion. Do something to create some taxable income. Bring that sucker up to zero. A lot of businesses out there have, you know, depreciation, or they have expenses from equipment that they bought that have created some net operating losses. Use them up. Don't just let them sit there. You know, something else that I've really focused a lot on, especially as my clients have aging parents that are dealing with long-term care issues, because, you know, most of our clients are going to be in that, you know, mid-50 to 70-year-old range. Well, their parents are in that age where they're old and they're needing a lot of help. And a lot of them don't have big retirement accounts. That wasn't really the thing for people in their 90s like it is for the boomers. But when you think about paying for expenses, like paying for home health care or paying for assisted living or nursing home care, use your taxable dollars to pay for that. So use the money that's in an annuity that has built-up gains, or an IRA or something, because then you can offset that with the expenses of the care. And it's not necessarily dollar for dollar, but it's pretty close. And then leave that other money behind, because when mom or dad dies, any money that they've not paid taxes on, you're going to pay taxes on. So why not use that right now? Hey, we're going to have to take a break, but when we come back, I'm going to talk more about this, because there were things like making sure that your power of attorney is on file with your financial institutions, and some of them won't accept it. And you need to know that now, not before it's too late. Inheritance, we're going to talk about, you know, just understanding the tax environment that we're in and how to get out of the way of a possible storm that's coming down the road. We're going to take a break. I'll come back with that and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, I love actually going out of town and attending conferences and being around these best of the best individuals in our industry. But boy, do I love coming back home. And I, on the way home, the only thing that I really regret is catching this cold that you're hearing me suffer through right now. I feel pretty good, but just don't sound very good. So if my voice cracks or doesn't sound too hot, that's the excuse I'm going with. And of course, this weekend, it's your last opportunity to see the most talented kids in Bloomington, the Sounds of South kids over at Bloomington High School South. They're putting on Beauty and the Beast, and it's on Halloween night. So if you want to shut the house down and go see a show rather than greet trick-or-treaters, it's a really fantastic show. You should check it out. It is so good that at the end, I'm like, you know what? They only performed this thing 3 times, and they put all of this time and effort. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, these are one of these shows you could take on the road. I mean, it's that good. So if you're into that kind of stuff, and I'm into it because my son's into it. Otherwise, I'm more of like this, you know, sports guy. But I like to do the stuff like that too. My wife and I, before we had kids, would, you know, go to things like, you know, Miss Saigon, and we'd go to things like the Beauty and the Beast. And I remember, now this is how things go when you're newly married. We wanted to see a pretty popular show, and I think it might have been Miss Saigon. It was being played up at the Murat Theater. And she, you know, had worked to try to get tickets. And I was probably in my, you know, late 20s at the time because we were married at 23. And she said, I can't believe it, but I finally got some terrific tickets. So this was around Christmas time that she bought the tickets. I said, okay, that's fine. It was on a Sunday afternoon, no problem. So about a week out, she goes, hey, don't forget, next Sunday we have tickets for Miss Saigon up at the Murat. And I'm like, next Sunday? She goes, yeah. I go, why? That's Super Bowl Sunday. I can't go to the show. She says, we're going to the show, and you're going to enjoy it. And that was ended up, I went to the show, of course, and I was like the only dude there. Everybody else were women. And bottom line is we got out of the show just in time for me to flip on the radio and hear the last couple of minutes that ended up being one of the greatest Super Bowls of all time. So you can still hear the disappointment in my voice, but I'm just saying that I don't think you're going to miss that much with trick-or-treaters on Saturday night by going to see Beauty and the Beast. And I'm not even sure if there's that many tickets available yet, but it'd be worth a shot if you can. But, you know, when people say, why do you join Ed Sly? Why do you find, you know, what do you find so fascinating about Ed Slott? Well, Ed Slott, and I've known him a long time, and he was named the best source for IRA advice by the Wall Street Journal. He was called America's IRA expert by Mutual Fund Magazine. Best-selling author. He's a big-time public speaker, public television specials. His most recent, Ed Slott's Retirement Roadmap. I mean, it plays in all major cities. He's played in Indianapolis before as well. He established this IRA leadership program that I'm part of called the Ed Slott Elite IRA Advisor Group. I'm one of the founding members, the first 50 that joined up many years ago. And he's just really has a mission to match competent advisors with consumers. I mean, consumers are needing this. And the reason this is so big now is that you're really seeing the first wave of retirees with retirement accounts. I mean, before the birth of the 401k and the proliferation of IRAs and tax-deferred accounts, most people had pensions. They didn't have to do any of this retirement planning stuff. They got their check. It was guaranteed for life, had some Social Security. Life was good, right? But then once companies realized they could transfer that risk and the responsibility of investing from themselves to the employees, they figured, well, that's good for us, so let's do it. And everyone switched to 401ks. And then a lot of money then ended up in IRAs. People were weaned off pensions. They were taught to save, but did so in tax-deferred accounts, where in the future, they're going to have to pay taxes at possibly a much higher rate. I mean, that's the theory. A pension plan, and this is why companies did it, a pension plan is called a defined benefit plan. That means they have to pay you a defined benefit for your entire life. Well, how do they know how long that's going to be? Versus a 401k that's called a defined contribution plan. Well, I know how long I'm going to contribute. I'm going to contribute up until the time you quit working for me, and then I'm done. So my future obligation is out, and that's why people move to these things. But as they were weaned off of pensions and they started saving in 401ks, that's what happened. So now nobody wants to go into retirement with a huge tax bill hanging over their head with some unknown amount based on how much the government needs at that time. Keep in mind, there's trillions of dollars in retirement accounts. It's low-hanging fruit for tax revenue. I know that because of my talks with the folks that, as a congressional advisor on the Ways and Means Committee. I mean, this is stuff that's on the radar. So it's big, low-hanging fruit. Could you imagine going to a bank, getting a loan on your mortgage, and the bank says, you know what, don't pay us anything on that loan yet, but when we need the money, we'll let you know, and we'll let you know how much we need, and that's when we'll tell you what the interest rate is. Who would sign up for that? You know, because we all signed up for these tax-deferred accounts, retirement accounts, IRAs, 401ks. That's pretty much what we've done. It sounds like a great idea at the time. You get a tax deduction up front. It goes in pre-tax. But what most people don't realize is that they're going to pay the tax later, and we don't even know how much it's going to be. We don't know what tax rates are going to be. We don't know how accelerated they're going to make required distributions. So with all of that money subject to some future tax bill, it's really a mistake to do nothing. And that's what this study group's all about, because it leaves you at the mercy of the government to determine how much of your tax bill will be at some given time when they decide that it's time for that money to come out. So obviously we think there's a better system. So you're going to hear me talk about tax-free a lot, but this is what Ed says. Ed's mantra is, you might say his mantra is, the mission is to move money from accounts that are taxed forever to accounts that are never taxed. And there's a lot of ways to do that. Now, do you take all of your money and move it to tax-free? No. But create tax diversification, just like you do with your investments. I want some money that I've already paid all the taxes on. And I want some money that I paid maybe some of the taxes on. And I want, and I'm going to have money that I haven't paid any of the taxes on. That just gives you more choice. Whenever it comes time for distributions, it gives you more choice. You can control your taxes much, much better. Does that make sense? So if you need a little help with that, let me know. I mean, I'm going to be around throughout the end of the year. And if that's you and you've been, you know, worried about these things, just let me know and we'll help you out. You can give us a call or shoot us an email at cfci.us. A couple of the other things that we talked about, and I wrote about this in my book, co-authored with Doug Hughes, of course, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, resource for those over 50. But we talked about the possibility of the elimination of the stretch IRA. Now, with the stretch IRA, again, for people, is just simply not a product, but it's a process. When you die, your account can be split into properly titled inherited IRAs. Your beneficiaries are only forced to take a minimum distribution based on their life expectancy while allowing the money to continue to grow tax-deferred. That's what the stretch is. You stretch it out over your lifetime. That is likely to go away. It's on the chopping block. It's more than likely going to require beneficiaries to take all of that money out of the retirement account over a five-year period of time, hence losing that stretch option. It's going to apply to Roth IRAs as well. So those that converted to Roth and think, okay, that's good because now I can create tax-free distributions to my beneficiaries over their lifetime, that's probably going away as well. So there's a lot of planning opportunities. I mean, I think in our world, our mantra is when there's a lot of change and confusion, it creates opportunities, and that's why we have a job. So I kind of like that. We're going to take a break when we come back. A couple of other things that you need to know about this new budget deal that's happening in Congress right now, passed, is moving on to the Senate and likely to be signed by the president. What does that mean to you and your Social Security claiming strategies that we've talked about and maybe based some of your future retirement income plans on? That may be changing. We'll be back to talk about that and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Just heard a great commercial from my good friend Steve Birch, who was promoting Furniture Exchange and Flat Steve. He said Flat Steve was loading up the trucks and moving to their new store. It's the old suburban bowling alley. And I wonder how Flat Steve actually can drive. He doesn't have a lot of mobility. Last time I checked him out. But I'll tell you what, if you haven't seen the old suburban bowling alley transformed into a wonderful, wonderful furniture store, you need to stop in and check it out. They're so proud of it, and they should be. So stop in there and check it out and say you heard me suggest they come in and see Steve, and then he might actually buy my dinner or something on the Friday night when I see him. So, but he's a great guy. They run a great business, very honest people. I know him through and through, so it's a good thing for them. I'm really, really happy for him. Hey, this budget thing that's going through. So, you know, we're not going to have the debt ceiling debate. I'm glad about that. We're going to pass this through, it looks like, and then for the next 2 years, we're not going to have to talk about debt ceiling again. But part of this budget agreement is that, and this kind of came out of left field just a little bit, that the game is almost over for Social Security claiming strategies. Now, what do I mean by that? You've heard us talk about the file and suspend or file and restrict spousal benefits only technique. It is terrific. I mean, it allows people to have much more long-term income with inflation adjustments. It's terrific. File and suspend. I file and suspend my benefit so that someone else can file on my record. So that's typically done in a spousal situation. And then I let mine delay. 8% per year, I get increases all the way up to 70. Then I start my benefit. 30, I mean, it's a wonderful idea. File and restrict. I want to file, but I'm going to restrict to my spouse-only benefit, and then I'll let mine accrue. That looks like it's on the chopping block. Mary Beth Franklin, of course, has been writing about this for years with Investment News and, of course, common guest here on The Big Show. She said as soon as this news leaked out about the pending congressional budget deal would kill the Social Security claiming strategies for almost everyone, she was inundated with questions from advisors and individual consumers about what it means. She says she was surprised. I mean, she said she got gobsmacked, whatever that means. I think that's because she lives on the East Coast. That's more like mobsmacked. But she said to me when I talked with her that she thinks that people who are already doing this strategy are going to be okay. She thinks, but she's not sure. She said it's a very fluid situation. There's been some amendments done to adjust this. But for anyone, she says, turning 62 in 2016, is probably your last chance to do any of these type of claiming strategies. So we'll find out more. We'll, of course, let you know. And I've been saying to people, even when we teach these Social Security classes over at Monroe County Library that, hey, if you're close to Social Security age or you're already there, I feel comfortable in telling you that you should make a plan around these strategies. But if you're not, don't. Know they exist so that you can ask the questions when it becomes time, but don't bank your future retirement income on these claiming strategies. And something else, a few weeks ago, I talked about Medicare. And if you weren't currently on Social Security, but you were on Medicare and you did not have the Medicare payments, therefore, taken out of your Social Security check, that because there were no cost of living increases on Social Security, there were no cost of living increases on Medicare if you were currently on Social Security and having the premiums deducted from your check. That's a double whammy. So for those that were on Medicare but not on Social Security, they were expecting a 52% rate increase on their Medicare premium payments. Well, part of this budget deal appears as though that's not going to happen. So don't, you know, abandon your Social Security strategy to avoid that Medicare tax. It's unlikely to happen. I had told you 2 weeks ago not to do anything until maybe December when we had a little clearer picture. Well, it happened much, much sooner than I ever anticipated. So there's a couple things for you to know and keep your eye out for. A couple of other things real quick while we still have some time. Last week at the Ed Slott meeting, we talked about inheritance. Had a speaker. The book was good. The speaker was terrible. But he wrote a book called Blood and Money. And he talked more about how to give inheritance. And, you know, you've heard me say this on the show, and I wrote about it in our book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, that when it comes to inheritance, fair is not always equal, right? I mean, I think that makes sense for most people. But he had a really good way to put this. He said, you know what? If you want to give more to one person when you're alive, do it, but give equally when you're dead. And he talked us through that, and I thought, you know what? That really makes some sense because I've been, you know, talking with clients about, okay, yeah, this one's a doctor, and, you know, this one's a lawyer, and this one is a school teacher. You know, they're all doing great, but income-wise, the school teacher isn't going to be able to save as much as the attorney or the doctor, perhaps. So maybe I should give more of the inheritance to that person. And what they said was, you know what, that creates problems. No matter how much you communicate that, it creates problems. So the best thing you can do is give while you're alive unequally or disproportionately, and then give equally when you're dead. I thought it was pretty good advice. You know, it's a great meeting. I love coming back with stuff. We came back with the power of attorney. You know, a lot of us have powers of attorney. You should have a power of attorney. It allows someone else to do things for you financially if you can't or choose not to. But make sure that's on file with your financial institutions because they may not accept it. They may not like the language. As an example, USAA, you know, the big military-based financial firm, insurance company, and they have their own. So if you're a member of USAA and you think that your POA is okay, it's not. They have their own. You can actually download it on their website. But that's true with other institutions as well. They may not like the language, and when you need it the most is when you find out, and then you can't even execute a new POA because the person that you had the POA for isn't able to execute one. So just be a little proactive, and if you have a POA, make sure it's on file with your financial institutions. It's a terrific, terrific idea. Oh my gosh, there's so much more to talk about, and I had questions of the week, comments of the week, all kinds of stuff. But I'm going to tell you, if you go to IRA Help, that's irahelp.com, that's Ed Slott's website, and there's so much material on there, and you'll see the elite section, which is what I'm part of. That's a member-only section. But if you're looking for an elite advisor, someone's Ed Slott trained, you can go there and find it out. I'm the only one in Bloomington that I'm aware of. There's a good guy up in Mooresville, Marty James. Spent a lot of time with him. He's a CPA up there. I know there's a couple up in Indianapolis. So they're scattered all around the state and around the country. So if you're looking for someone that really understands tax and how it relates to your retirement accounts, you definitely want to go check out irahelp.com. I better take a quick break. When I come back, I'll wrap up the big show, preview what's coming up next week. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, if you're like me, you collect stuff and you think, oh, I might want to use that later, and you stick it under a pile and your piles get bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, my office is a little bit like that. And in fact, Angela today, she said, hey, I have some files I need to bring to your office, but I don't want to clutter your office up. And I said, really? So they can look at it. But yeah, Keith Klein's the king of clutter, just so you know, not to out him, but hey, I'm with you, brother. But I found this article, so I was kind of going through some material, and this is something I've carried around since 2005, and it was called the Pension Pickle. And it talks about a broke widower losing $1 million to their in-law. And this goes to illustrate the point that the beneficiary form trumps it all. The Friedmans, they were happily married for nearly 20 years when Annie, a former city school principal, died suddenly of a massive heart attack in 2001. Friedman said he never doubted he was entitled to the lump sum payment of over $900,000 because the teacher's retirement system had sent out annual statements that indicated that no named beneficiary was listed, and that would make him the closest relative and therefore the beneficiary. But after she died, officials found a form which was filled out 27 years ago, 4 years before the couple met on a blind date in 1978. It indicated that Annie's mother, uncle, and sister should collect the money. Well, Annie's mother and uncle have died, so the sister, Virginia, was awarded all the money. And Friedman complains, she won't give me a cent. He went on to talk about how shocked she was, but a Manhattan Supreme Court ruling held that Annie's intention of making her husband the beneficiary could not be assumed, and that the paperwork was on file from 1974, said that Virginia was awarded the money. The Supreme Court decision was upheld in the appellate courts, and so on and so forth. So the lesson to be learned there, folks, is update your beneficiary forms. Many ERISA plans require a spouse to sign off not to be the plan, but non-ERISA plans, like obviously this one in New York City, was not, and therefore Virginia got all the money. So pay attention to the details. The devils are in the details. Next week's show, it is the first week of the month next week, so we'll be talking investments for the most part. You know, it is Nifty November. The third best month on history is November, so we'll talk with Hot Rod next week. But also, we've lined up a guest, hopefully, to talk about some new strategy that's kind of catching wind that somewhat takes the volatility out of your returns. It's volatility-controlled investments. Now, they're not real sexy, but they seem to be pretty reliable. But we want to get you in front of this because, just like anything, they're not always what they appear, but we want you to understand them. So if you're presented them, you read about them, you'll know about them. So again, next week on the investment show, we'll be talking a lot about that. Had some questions that were posed to me this week that we didn't get to, so I'll try to roll those on to next week. And things like, will the qualified charitable distribution come back? We'll give you some information about that next week. And when do you have to take your first required minimum distributions? And then three Roth IRA myths that you can't afford to believe. We'll be talking about all of that on the investment show next week. This has been Your Money with David Hayes. Goodbye. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Guest opinions on this show do not necessarily represent those of the radio station, David Hayes, or CFCI. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC registered investment advisor, 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana.